everyone. Welcome back to my channel, or welcome if you're new here. My name is Madison, and I make video essays about trending topics in pop culture. I'm also a singer and a songwriter, so if you liked that song that played in the beginning, you can stream it. Links are below. It's called I Killed My Clone. It's on Spotify, Apple Music, etc. And today we are going to be talking about the crunchification of conservatism, the hippie to alt-right pipeline. I have been very curious about this topic for the past year or so, especially because it kind of hits close to home as someone who does engage in certain crunchy behaviors or habits. I've been seeing this peek through more and more in the past couple years with the rise of trad wives and homesteading, two topics I have talked about previously, and now with the rise of conservatism and our current administration, it is so glaringly obvious that crunchiness has gone through a conservative rebrand. So I have to ask you, when you think of granola or crunchiness in terms of lifestyle, what comes to your mind? For me, it's Birkenstocks and organic produce, farmers markets, Portland, Oregon, etc. Republicans and conservatives don't come to my mind at all. In fact, I think the complete opposite. I think of liberals, hippies. Although the term crunchy really gained peak popularity in the 90s, it goes back all the way to the 60s and 70s during the height of the hippie counterculture, which developed as a reaction to the Vietnam War and capitalism, civil rights, and overall dissatisfaction and unrest occurring in the United States. A lifestyle once associated with liberals has now evolved into a conservative dog whistle. And I want to talk about how that happened, how that all came to be. There are definitely a lot of intersections between liberals and conservatives when it comes to a crunchy lifestyle, but there are some clear distinctions that definitely need to be addressed that both sides are strongly opposed to. Speaking of health and wellness, let me tell you about today's sponsor, Calm. As someone who prioritizes their mental and physical health in their day-to-day life, Calm is an amazing app that has helped me stay grounded and well-rested. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. Calm provides meditations, grounding exercises, sleep meditations, sleep stories, and calming music. Your mindfulness practice and bedtime routine can be made effortless with the help of Calm. So stress less, sleep more, and live better with Calm. Go to calm.com/Madison for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/Madison. So I'm sure most of you, at least in the States, have heard the term crunchy or granola, but just to be super clear, I will define it for you really quick. Being crunchy encompasses a holistic approach to life, prioritizing natural living, environmental sustainability, and mindful consumption. The term gained traction in the 1990s as an offshoot of the hippie movement, advocating for organic food, eco-friendly products, and alternative medicine. This means that the goal of being crunchy is to be socially and environmentally responsible. Now, hearing that definition, you're probably thinking, how the hell does that have to do with Republicans and the far right? Because we usually don't associate terms like environmental sustainability and social responsibility with Republicans. Now, this might seem like I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but I want to talk about one specific crunchy conservative talking point that sparked the inspiration for this video and my overall curiosity about this topic. I want to talk about raw milk for a second. So I'd become aware of raw milk a couple of years ago through online health and wellness spaces. If you're into health and wellness, fitness, all that kind of stuff, it's probably come up on your For You page on TikTok or on Twitter or whatever.
What are the benefits of raw milk? Because I'm sold on the benefits.
Raw milk is just milk. It's milk that hasn't been heated and pasteurized. 100 or so years ago, all milk was raw. And what happened is, you know, there was an urbanization, there was an industrialization. People are moving into cities. And the milk that we've had for 100 years on farms that we're used to eating or drinking in the 1800s is now we want that in the city. And so they realized, hey, if we're going to milk cows in a city, we can't do it in the same sanitary conditions. They were milking cows in sub-sanitary conditions. They were feeding the cows swill, which are the spent grains of beer and alcohol production. They were feeding the cows garbage. They were milking them in substandard conditions. And the milk was problematic. And this is where pasteurization came in and probably saved a lot of lives because they were basically producing milk in a non-sanitary way. But historically, in conditions where you're getting milk from a cow on a farm and you're washing the udders and the cow is eating good food and the cow is healthy and you can collect the milk into a sterile or a clean vessel and chill it quickly, that's a much different operation than taking milk that's from a cow that's not fed the right foods or that's milked in unsanitary conditions and trying to feed that to humans unpasteurized. So raw milk is essentially milk that has not been heated.
And this was like right before the far right really started to champion raw milk for some reason. It seems kind of random, but it's actually not. And so just seeing it pop up on social media, I started to become curious about it. And I was meeting people in real life who drank the stuff. And so I was like, okay, I guess, yeah, it's like a healthier version of milk because it's unpasteurized, so it doesn't kill all the good bacteria and enzymes and vitamins that you can get from raw milk. If you are a gut healthy conscious person, bacteria or healthy bacteria is actually a good thing for the gut microbiome, et cetera, et cetera. So you can see how, like, the way I think about food, the raw milk thing didn't really alarm me all that much. Again, I'm not a farmer. I don't know anything about the pasteurization process. Raw milk, its enthusiasts claim, contains probiotics, enzymes, and vitamins that are reduced, damaged, or made inactive by the pasteurization process. The FDA disagrees in a 10,000-word post on its website. Some other raw milk drinkers just prefer the creamier, sweeter taste.
Where is all this positive talk about raw milk actually coming from? Well, it started with research out of Switzerland, which showed that there may be a connection to children raised on a farm drinking raw milk and the development of healthier immune systems. These children that were raised on farms were truly found to have lower rates of allergies and asthma. It's speculated that their immune systems develop differently with more regulatory T cells that help prevent allergic responses. Raw milk may have also played a role because they have some non-specific bioactive molecules that may subtly play a role in immune development. Also, farm children develop gut microbiomes, that's the bacteria in your gut, that produce more butyrate. It's a metabolite that's been linked to reduced asthma risk. These benefits were only seen with very early exposure, either in utero or during infancy. So the protective effect was diminished with later life introduction. So that's why the hype for adults doesn't make a lot of sense. Raw milk is significantly more dangerous to consume than pasteurized milk. It's 840 times more likely to cause significant illness. Between 1998 and 2018, raw milk caused over 2,600 illnesses, 228 hospitalizations, and 3 deaths. Recent outbreaks have involved E. coli, Salmonella, Listeria, and even more scary,
a batch of whole raw milk being voluntarily recalled tonight in California after health officials detected bird flu in a sample sold in stores.
I didn't really have a strong stance on raw milk. I was like, okay, yeah, I guess like some people drink it because it's kind of good for you. I'm not really sure. I kind of forgot about it until it became relevant to me again once I realized that raw milk is like a symbol of the far right. And I was confused because I'm like, oh, really? Like, I thought this was for like homesteading hippies who have chickens in their backyard and wear cotton clothing. Like, I was surprised to learn about this. And I've met people in real life who drink it. Were they secretly alt-right and I just didn't realize it? Am I on the alt-right pipeline and I'm just like now realizing it? I was like, what the hell? I'm like questioning everything. And before you say yes, you were on the alt-right pipeline, raw milk does have kind of Democrat left-leaning origins. Okay, so I'm not completely crazy for thinking this. During the Obama administration, during that era of time, raw milk, although was more niche and not as mainstream as it is now, was heavily associated with liberals and Democrats. David Gumpert, a former Business Week columnist and Wall Street Journal reporter, wrote a book called Raw Milk Revolution. It chronicled the battle between state regulators and farmers who were willing to break the law to give the health-conscious consumers what they want at a price far higher than they could fetch from a dairy distributor. Gumpert was and is an advocate for drinking raw milk, and his writers lambasting over regulation of the product were published in unquestionably left-leaning outlets like The Nation and Grist. Whole Foods even used to sell raw milk at a point, and again, Whole Foods is heavily associated with the crunchy left-leaning hippies. The chain was so popular with Democrats that Dave Wasserman, an election analyst at the Cook Political Report, came up with an easy way of predicting an election. The counties with a Whole Foods voted for the Democrat, and the counties with a Cracker Barrel voted for the Republican. The New York Times wrote an article in 2010 about raw milk, one of many sympathetic articles from that time period, that put raw milk consumption alongside other food movements picking up steam in America, organic, buy local, vegan, vegetarian, and the like. So we get that raw milk used to be liberal, and now it's Republican, and it's just one example of this conservative crunchiness rebrand. brand. So people who identify as crunchy but also conservative are referred to as crunchy cons, which is actually a phrase coined by conservative author Rob Dreher, who wrote the book, bear with me here, Crunchy Cons, How Birkenstocked Birkins, Gun-Loving Organic Gardeners, Evangelical Free-Range Farmers, Hip Homeschooling Mamas, Right-Wing Nature Lovers, and Their Diverse Tribe of Countercultural Conservatives Plan to Save America, or at least the Republican Party. This book was actually written in 2006, and it was inspired by a previous article that he had written that was published in 2002. So the idea of crunchy conservatives has been around for a while, actually. He describes crunchy cons as people who prefer old houses and mom-and-pop shops to McMansions and strip malls. Many of us homeschooled our kids and cheerfully embraced nonconformity. I read Edmund Burke and wear Birkenstock sandals. Go figure. I don't really know how to pronounce his last name, so I'm sorry if it's wrong, but Dreher describes his journey towards the crunchy side is almost like an accident, which makes sense because traditionally being crunchy is perceived as very left-leaning. One day last summer, I told a colleague I had to leave early to pick up my weekly batch of fresh vegetables from the organic food co-op to which my wife Julie and I belong to. Ugh, that's so lefty, she said. And she was right. Organic vegetables are a left-wing cliche. Indeed, I once made fun of neighbors who belong to a co-op that delivers fresh fruits and vegetables from local organic farms to our Brooklyn streets. But then, the neighbors gave us 1 week's vegetable shipment and we were knocked flat by the intense flavors. Who knew cauliflower had so much taste? It was the freshness of the produce, not its organic status of dubious nutritional advantage, that we were responding to. So like I said earlier, although there are some overlap with the right and left when it comes to crunchy living, there are some clear distinctions, and I want to discuss some of those right now. Many of these distinctions are according to Rob Dreher and how he describes crunchy conservative values. It all started to click for me once I realized that the conservationist aspect of crunchiness is what appeals so much to conservatives. Because after all, conservatives are conservationists of the past, right? They idealize how things used to be and believe that older is better. So how did we get to be so crunchy, as in crunchy a slang term for earthy types, without realizing what was happening? Much of our crunchy conservatism comes from simply being carried along by the tide of our lives and discovering by trial and error things that work well. But it's also grounded in basic attitudes we've long held. That generally speaking, small and local and particular and old are better. That beauty in all its forms is important to the good life. That the bright glare of television and the cacophony of media culture make it too hard to discern the call of truth and wisdom. That we are citizens before we are consumers. And most important of all, that faith and family are the true point of life. And that last tidbit about faith and family brings me to my next point, which is religion. One of the main distinctions between conservative and liberal crunchiness is the religious aspect. Liberals, although have their kind of spiritual associations with crunchiness, it's not centered around organized religion like Christianity. It's more like woo-woo stuff, whereas crunchy conservatives have this kind of sacramental approach to the crunchy lifestyle. Four basic areas are touchstones for crunchy conservatives: religion, the natural world, beauty, and family. For many crunchy cons, religion is the starting point from which beliefs about everything else follow. They crave an older, more demanding kind of religion, a faith with backbone that stands against the softness of bourgeois Christianity. As you talk to religious crunchy cons, you find a surprising number who are religious converts of one sort or another, many of them to traditional Roman Catholicism or Eastern Orthodoxy. Tradition isn't something we cling to, it's something we consciously seek, says Jim Christensen, 47, a Washington lawyer and converted traditionalist Catholic. That whiff of the past is precious these days. I also think there's kind of this like purity aspect to crunchy living. You know, you eat clean, you drink purified water. You know, I can see how maybe someone who is a devout Christian could feel like they're maybe getting closer to God by living this clean and pure lifestyle. The Crunchy Cons author also has very firm beliefs about anti-individualism. You know, homesteading and crunchy living tends to be very pro community building. I think that's a good thing, and honestly, liberals, leftists especially, are also pro community and share that same value in some ways, although without the religious aspect, which is interesting because I think people on the far right And I believe this author also shares this idea that liberals are very individualistic. And there is some individualism for sure. I mean, we talk about choice feminism and things like that, which are very individualistic ways of thinking. Socialism and communism are very community-based. I think the individualism that comes through that is the loudest to the right-leaning side is the identity politics. And lastly, I wanted to touch on the environmental aspect of crunchiness. Obviously, Republicans are not really known for caring about the environment. Climate deniers tend to be on the alt-right side of things, but even crunchy cons have their environmental concerns, although they're more aesthetic than ecological. In the crunchy con view, right-wing indifference to natural beauty extends to the man-made world. Today's conservatives don't say enough about the importance of aesthetic standards. Suburban sprawl and ugly architecture, lousy chain restaurant food, bad beer, and scorn for the arts are defended by many rank-and-file Republicans as signs of populist authenticity, as opposed to the elitist notion that aesthetics matter. And I mean, that is true. I think any sort of concern about aesthetics, whether it's through the arts or not wanting to live next to a giant strip mall where all you have to look at is a Walmart and like an Arby's, is considered elitist for some reason. Aesthetics do have an impact on your life. And of course, the whole strip mall thing is because of the fact that America was built for cars, which seems to be also more of like a liberal talking point. Concerns for the environment in terms of aesthetics is still a pretty unpopular opinion for a Republican. And, you know, ecological impact is still not really that big of a concern. It seems like, according to the Crunchy Con writer, like other Republicans, Crunchy Cons believe that industrial progress is to blame for a lot of America's issues. I mean, again, going back to raw milk, technological industrial progress is the reason why we started pasteurizing milk. Progressivism was also on the rise at the turn of the 20th century, with the widespread belief that science would help build a safer and healthier country. Naturally, when milk pasteurization was proven to be effective, city officials rushed to adopt it. New York City was first to mandate pasteurization in 1910. Other cities quickly followed suit, and states began to ban the sale of raw milk as well. One of the most important aspects of crunchy conservatism is a distrust for the medical system and the government at large. Plays a huge role when it comes to the rise of crunchy conservatives. It pushed people further down the conspiracy, QAnon, misinformation rabbit hole, that's for sure. There is a like clear pipeline from like holistic medicine to anti, or maybe it's the other way around. I mean, so many conspiracies popped up during because of, and I think also COVID and the fact that there were so many regulations and people were forced to stay inside and wear masks caused people, Republicans specifically, to push back on the government because they didn't want to be told what to do. In addition to the yoga and spirituality community, which is already grappling with an influx of QAnon believers, the natural childbirth and natural parenting communities are also starting to be infiltrated by conspiracy theorists thanks to the convergence of various anti- and QAnon conspiracy theories that has taken place during the pandemic. To an extent that this intersection has been years in the making. While not everyone in the natural parenting community is anti, there definitely seems to be an overlap between the natural pregnancy and anti communities. The parenting aspect of all of this is really interesting. Moms really seem to be at the forefront of the anti-vax movement, and they've always been around. You know, before being anti-vax was associated with the far right, the hippie, crunchy homeschooling moms who didn't want to give their children vaccines were the most vocal about how vaccines could potentially be dangerous for children and all that stuff. Being a parent is hard, and being a mother, you want to protect your kids from perceived danger and you don't want anything bad to happen to them, but it seems obviously kind of counterintuitive because vaccines are supposed to protect you. But unfortunately, mothers are just seemingly the most susceptible to anti-vaccine propaganda. And there's so much emotion around the idea that children are in danger. You know, nurturing mothers are like kind of the perfect spokesperson for something like this because it elicits such a strong reaction out of people. Once you start talking about saving the children, I mean, logic seems to just go out of the window for some reason because it is such a sensitive topic. The first thing I noticed was that some of these women who looked like the Christian Girl Autumn meme with wide-brimmed hats and beachy waves tended to have a backstory that led them to distrust trust mainstream medicine and the idea of medical expertise. They often had a scary medical problem during pregnancy or immediately postpartum, and they felt unheard by their obstetrician or pediatrician or mistreated by their hospital. That experience planted a seed of fear and suspicion. Online merchants peddling natural remedies and those who exposed debunked theories about the danger of vaccines were more than happy to validate their raw feelings when the medical system did not. And when you mix in fear and these really strong emotions into the mix, of course, you're going to be susceptible to something that maybe isn't super logical, but is backed up with a lot of anecdotal evidence and these really intense and, again, emotional testimonies. Like, I think emotion is way stronger when it comes to convincing people into any sort of belief system rather than logic. And listen, I get it. Like, as a Black woman, I can understand where they're coming from because Black people have a history of being abused by the medical system. And so a lot of Black people have a huge distrust for the American medical system. I mean, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Locks, that alone should inform you as to why that is. You know, Black people have been exploited, experimented on, tortured by doctors in this country for centuries. So a distrust for the medical system is not foreign to me. Black women have the highest mortality rate during childbirth, not because of our genetics, but because doctors continuously neglect the pain of Black women. We're seen as like more tolerant of pain for some reason, or we're considered dramatic when we're expressing genuine pain. So a distrust for the medical system is not exclusive to right-wing anti- I'm very critical of the United States healthcare system. I mean, it's very flawed and essentially broken. So I'm not like sitting here saying like, yeah, there are no problems with big pharma, the medical industry, the FDA, etc. There are problems. I honestly think the reason why health and wellness and fitness has become so popular in the past few years is because people are realizing how broken the medical system is, and it's just too expensive to be sick. You have to take your health into your own hands and be very conscientious of what you put into your body and how you take care of yourself in this country, because it's very easy to become addicted to ultra-processed foods that could be seriously detrimental to your health. And the government just allows these additives and chemicals to be put into our food, highly caloric foods that are, again, so easy to just consume and become addicted to. In my opinion, it seems like the alt-right's main priority isn't health. It's more so the push for anti-establishment and anti-regulation, anti-government, etc. Which on the surface, I'm like, yeah, I'm definitely not pro-establishment, that's for sure. I mean, I don't think the alt-right needs to be anti-government anymore because they won. Like, the government is on their side when it comes to changing regulations around the FDA and the CDC. But my version, or the left-leaning version of anti-establishment, is a little different than the right wing's idea of anti-establishment. Something I really don't agree with is their, again, distrust of experts. I mean, conservatives really do not like facts. They don't like experts. They don't want to hear their opinions. And again, this all stems from it, and the fact that, you know, they don't trust the elites that are supposedly profiting off of in the vaccine and things like that. Conservatives on average trust everything less, from experts to politicians to media to other people in general. The latter, Republicans' disproportionate general distrust of other people, has even skewed polling, since Republican voters are now less likely to answer polls, according to Democratic pollster David Shore. This new trust polarization, where the trusting vote Democrat and the distrustful vote Republican, began to take off during Trump's 2016 campaign, which he ran in opposition to and shared mutual disrespect with America's elites and experts. But trust polarization, especially as it relates to raw milk and other unprocessed foods, seems to have accelerated rapidly in recent years thanks to the COVID pandemic, when Republicans mobilized in opposition to lockdowns and mandates, and Democrats mobilized in favor since it was the experts' recommendation. So last and certainly not least, I want to talk about Maha! Make America Healthy Again, the motto of RFK Jr., the current Health and Human Services Secretary under the Trump administration. He's declaring that he's going to make America healthy again. He said, "F the vaccines. Bring on the measles. I ain't scared."
Hey, everyone. I'm here today to tell you how we can make America healthy again. And I'm partnering with President Donald Trump to transform our nation's food, fitness, air, water, soil, and medicine. Our big priority will be to clean up the public health agencies like CDC, NIH, FDA, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Those agencies have become sock puppets for the industries that they're supposed to regulate. We're going to get toxic additives and pesticide residues out of our food. We're going to support the tens of millions of Americans who choose alternative and complementary medicine.
According to the White House website, whitehouse.org, the purpose of MAHA is to fully address the growing health crisis in America. We must redirect our national focus in the public and private sectors toward understanding and drastically lowering chronic disease rates and ending childhood chronic disease. This includes fresh thinking on nutrition, physical activity, healthy lifestyles, over-reliance on medication and treatments, the effects of new technological habits, environmental impacts, and food and drug quality and safety. We must restore the integrity of the scientific process by protecting expert recommendations from inappropriate influence and increasing transparency regarding existing data. So some of those talking points on the surface sound valid and logical, but they're also very vague. And just digging a centimeter deeper into RFK Jr.'s beliefs about the medical system and food and health, you will quickly realize that he is full of shit. I mean, like, truly, truly, so many of his statements are like a steaming pile of misinformation garbage with plenty of data and research to debunk them. So let's talk about some of these specific goals, shall we? One of his goals is to ban pesticides and additives in our food. He wants to take the poisons out of our food, which I have definitely talked about how I think the food in America is poison. At least I should say America allows poison into our foods. Not all of it's poison, but I definitely think that the government needs to like chill on what they allow into our food. And this is something that comes up a lot with RFK Jr. is like, he'll name this overarching problem that is a genuine problem, but then he'll pinpoint one thing that is like honestly a non-issue and does not actually do anything to solve the larger problem at hand.
Yeah, you know, I think we can all agree that America has room for improvement, right? We live the shortest lives, have the most avoidable deaths, have worse health outcomes compared to other developed countries. The first step is accurately identifying what is causing us to be unhealthy and fix that. I do think that there is need for improvement, for example, through the regulatory process and through a conflict of interest. But a lot of the Make America Healthy Again talking points are not necessary, are focusing on organic food or demonizing pesticides that just won't move the needle. And look, I think I'm going to agree with things RFK Jr. says. He says reasonable statements, but then mixes them with outright falsehoods. And in the end, I think it's a matter of whether RFK Jr.'s net impact is positive or negative. And given his history of sowing doubt and incredibly effective public health interventions, he can do a lot of harm.
For example, he talks about like wanting to reduce processed food and emphasize organic food and like food programs and stuff. And that sounds great, except his idea of unhealthy is grains and seed oils. I really need the seed oil warriors to step the fuck down, because it's getting ridiculous.
These kind of products.
Seed oils are one of the most unhealthy ingredients that we have in foods, and the reason they're in the foods is because they're heavily subsidized. They're very, very cheap, but they are associated with all kinds of very, very serious illnesses, including body-wide inflammation.
Right.
Which affects all of our health. It's one of the worst things you can eat, and it's almost impossible to avoid. If you eat any processed food, you're going to be eating seed oil.
He's right. Seed oils are associated with a number of chronic diseases, but it's with a lower risk of them. Dietary linoleic acid, that's the main type of fat in most of these seed oils, is associated with a 15% lower risk of coronary heart disease events. That's things like heart attacks and strokes, and 21% lower risk of coronary heart disease deaths. Do seed oils cause inflammation? What does the science show? This systematic review and meta-analysis explains concerns have been raised about linoleic acid because of potential pro-inflammatory and also potential thrombogenic properties. However, this speculation is not supported by randomized controlled studies. Intake of linoleic acid was not found to increase inflammatory markers. We have a video going over dozens of these trials one by one, covering six or seven different types of seed oil, heated seed oil, not heated seed oil, large amounts, smaller amounts, longer follow-ups, shorter follow-ups. You consistently don't see a pro-inflammatory effect over and over and over again.
I just feel like, you know, especially if you're someone who does eat mostly whole foods and eats your veggies and, you know, like you have a good balanced diet, seed oils are not gonna kill you. And even on the flip side, if you're eating McDonald's every day and chugging a liter of Dr. Pepper, injecting your veins with trans fats and sugar, the seed oils are really the last thing you need to be worried about. JFK Jr. also wants to reform the FDA and prioritize alternative medicine. I'm not against alternative medicine, but I'm also not anti-medicine either. I'm certainly not anti-vaccination, that's for sure. Am I skeptical of Big Pharma? Absolutely. I mean, Big Pharma is incredibly predatory and is the reason why this country is facing an opioid epidemic. Could have been completely avoided if it weren't for corporate greed and weak regulations. So yes, not a huge fan of Big Pharma, not a big fan of the medical industry, like I said, but I don't think that SSRIs are linked to mass. Yes, that is real.
In an interview in 2023 and again in 2024, you blamed school on antidepressants. You said, and this is a quote, "There is no time in American history or human history that kids were going to schools and their classmates. It really started happening coterminous with the introduction of these drugs, with Prozac and with other drugs." So do you believe, as you've said, that antidepressants cause school? This is should be a simple question.
I don't think anybody can answer that question, and I didn't answer that question. I said it should
be
studied. I said it should be studied along with other potential culprits, like
so they may cause
social media. But I don't know. I would never make, because there's no science on that.
Well, you've described Americans who take mental health medications as addicts who need to be sent to wellness farms to recover. Is that what you believe?
Oh, of course, I didn't say that anybody should be compelled to do anything.
No, but you said they should be sent.
I said they should be available to them.
Of course, I believe food can be medicine and your diet has a huge impact on your overall health, but food isn't enough if you are facing a chronic illness or injury. That raw milk will not heal that broken leg. Those organic raspberries will not get rid of those measles that you contracted because you're anti-vaccine. I don't understand this like one or the other extremist belief system when it comes to health and medicine. I think you can incorporate both holistic and Western medicine into your life because I think both are valid, but relying on one or the other and just like ignoring a completely other side of medicine could be like really detrimental to your health. We made him for a reason. And RFK Jr. definitely knows that food alone is not enough to keep you healthy because he is a massive supporter of the supplement industry. Ironically, an industry notorious for its lack of FDA regulation and is full of snake oil salesmen. I mean, if you want to talk about the pharmaceutical industry, a lot of their issues can also be found in the supplement industry. RFK Jr. is very anti-fluoride. He believes that the presence of fluoride may negatively impact children's IQs.
Certainly, trying to connect fluoride in the water to health risks is not new. That's been going on for decades. And over again, those potential connections, for example, you know, hip fractures or bone cancer, those have all been disproven. The more recent concerns that have arisen have come from concerns about impact on neurocognitive development based on fetal exposure and early childhood exposure to fluoride. I think we don't know what the exact dose would be that would cause those problems. We know somewhat, but the quality of the studies is not good. Where this really started to take off was when there was an article published late in the 2010s with first author named Green. And he conducted some epidemiologic analysis based on some cities in Canada and ended up concluding that fluoride exposure early in development could decrease IQ in boys. And so that paper was published in a prominent pediatric journal and got a lot of press. However, there's a lot of problems with that particular study, and subsequent studies have not shown that same effect, and in fact have shown opposite effects. And also, there's been population-based studies, which we know do a much better job at establishing cause and effect, that have shown absolutely no effect on neurocognitive development or IQ scores, and in fact have shown that actually, on an economic analysis, if you have your cavities, if it appears, you're more likely to be successful in life and to attain higher earnings in adulthood.
Do we need fluoride in the water anymore? I mean, we have access to fluoridated toothpaste, we have access to more dental work.
So the important advantage to community water fluoridation is it's available to everyone, regardless of their access to dental care. It's also available to everyone, regardless of their ability to routinely participate in home oral hygiene practices. So that, I think, is why we've seen it be effective, particularly in eradicating some disparities in oral health, which are pretty pronounced in the United States.
Anyways, back in my day, the fluoride was shutting the third eye. It was calcifying the pineal gland. What y'all know about that? Okay. Was I fluoride pilled in high school? Yes. All this to be said, you know, if you're a health conscious girl, if you are a yoga attending, organic food eating, farmer's market patron, please don't let this video and the alt-right deter you from caring about your health. I mean, obviously, like, data is data. You know what is real and what isn't based off of research and reputable sources. But I hope that the changing perception of crunchiness and its association with the far right doesn't stop people from doing what's right for their bodies and their health. But at the same time, I also think it's good to every once in a while kind of question your beliefs and take stock of the things and habits that you do and remind yourself of why you do them and check in, you know, does it still have value? Does it apply? Are the things that I believe actually true? Are they still true? Things like that. So again, I'm always looking in these wellness spaces because it's just something I'm interested in. And even the whole seed oil conversation has confused me and has made me question, like, oh, are these things bad? Should I be eating seed oils? And I'm like checking the ingredients of my food. And doing this research reminded me, like, oh yeah, the whole seed oil thing is like so ridiculous and just unnecessary. And my biggest gripe with the health and wellness industry and how it's depicted online is the overcomplication of it. When it comes to seed oils and supplements and all that stuff, there's a lot of like fear-mongering attached to them because honestly, people are just trying to sell you something. Unfortunately, it enacts fear in people, and you know, these people do buy the product and become so consumed with it that the, like, I guess propaganda works on them. But at the same time, there it has an opposite effect where I think it can push people away from health and wellness because they see all these influencers talking about seed oils and glyphosates and all these things. It just makes them throw their hands up in the air and say, you know what, this is too complicated, it's too hard, give me the goddamn Red 40 and Taco Bell, I don't care anymore. And that's not what we want, you know? Health can be really simple, it doesn't have to be so over complicated, but that's the health and wellness industry for you, unfortunately. And it's, you know, it's kind of ironic because I feel like, you know, if you're losing sleep over things like seed oils and that's like something you're genuinely stressed out about every day, don't you think that would be worse for your health, the stress of that, than just like moving your body daily, drinking water and eating whole foods? Like, it doesn't, again, it doesn't have to be that complicated. And if you are so stressed out about every morsel of food you put into your body, that is not healthy. And you're completely like counteracting the point of what you're doing. You know what I mean? Anyways, that's all I have to say for today's video. I need to lay down. The lights and the rage are frying my brain. So, bye.